Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app. Today is July 20th, 2022. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 31,874, the NASDAQ at 11,897, and the S&P at 3,959. Tonight, our topic is real estate in the Valley, overview and tips. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Eric is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810, and if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and bring it into the studio. And if you have questions that you would rather email to us, you can certainly do that through yourfinancialchoices.com. Again, our topic this evening is real estate in the Lehigh Valley, overview and tips. And I am happy to welcome back my guest, Carrie Ward, realtor from Howard Hanna, the Frederick Group. Welcome back, Carrie.
Thank you, Lori. It's great to be back again after 2 years, I think it was. It's been... I can't believe it's been almost 2 years since
well,
I was here.
Well, you've probably been very, very busy the past 2 years as well. From where we were when you came 2 years ago to where we are, we have a lot to catch up on and a lot to discuss. So I'm really happy to have you here. And can you first start just by introducing yourself and giving a little bit of your background to our listeners before
sure.
we start?
Real estate is my second career, my passion, lifelong passion, and I spent 30 years in corporate IT working for various companies in the Lehigh Valley and in Canada as well, and started my real estate career part-time working with investors, and then when I retired, I moved to full-time with real estate and have been doing it full-time for probably 3 or 4 years now.
Okay, well, wonderful. And we see you around, so you're doing good things. So we're happy to have you here to help answer questions for listeners. And, of course, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810 or through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. And we did have a question come through email, which we'll cover, you know, in a bit. But first, I just kind of want to get a catch-up from Carrie over what's happened over the last couple years. What's been going on?
It's been a wild ride. From being non-essential for 2 months in 2020 and literally doing nothing, we've been running to keep pace with the demand of the buyers in this unprecedented seller's market. People with 30 years experience have never seen anything like this before. It seems that everyone suddenly decided they wanted to buy a home. It's not uncommon for buyers to submit 10 or more offers on successive homes and before getting one accepted. And many buyers are taking 2 years or more to finally get that one.
In this environment or in normal environments?
No, in this environment.
Okay.
Normally, you go shopping, you pick a few houses, you put in a couple of offers, and one is accepted.
Wow. So that, you know, I know myself when we were trying to sell our home back in 1998, and it took 2 years to sell our home. What you're saying, it's taking 2 years to sometimes buy a home.
Yes.
So I know the stress I was under in trying to always, like, you know, have the house ready and that type of thing. So what are you seeing happening with your buyers and the agents? Of course, if you said this is unprecedented and we haven't seen this, How do you help them along through this?
With a lot of coaching, a lot of hand-holding, a lot of explaining that this is the normal market and not to be discouraged. Some agents recently called an agent who's been working with the buyers for over 2 years, and they had put in offer after offer after offer and didn't get it accepted. And he said to me, "Are you kidding? Are you pulling my leg? We won? We won this offer?"
Yeah.
I said, no, it's real. I'm not kidding. This is not a reality show. We're trying to catch you. And then when we were at the closing table, the buyers were reciting where they were when they found out that they had gotten a home. It was that traumatic of an experience. And
like when I passed my CPA exam, I still could go right back there. But that's wonderful, though. That's wonderful news and kind of guiding them through that.
In the end, it's well worth it to see the jubilation on the buyers' faces and in their eyes when you hand them the keys to their house, finally, after 2 years of searching.
Now, you know, we've been seeing in the news that, you know, with mortgage rates, with the Fed raising interest rates, which then passes on to banks offering mortgages, and we see interest rates go up on the mortgages, and now we see maybe people aren't going to be able to afford, you know, the mortgage that they thought they were going to be able to maybe a year ago. So it seems like we're not hearing in the news as much about the hot real estate market. Is it cooling off a little bit? Does that mean, you know, everyone's done buying houses?
No. Yes and no, to answer your question. Let's look at it from the point of view of balance between supply and demand.
Economics, yeah.
As you know, supply and demand drives prices, and prices drive activity in the market. So on the supply side, we need to consider the inventory. The number of homes for sale is basically our inventory in the MLS and continues to be at or near all-time lows. And that's been that way for years. Sellers are still very cautious about listing their home for sale before they have another home to go to. They don't want to be homeless, and I don't blame them. And this fact is seriously constraining the number of existing homes available in the market. Now, traditionally, new construction, the creation of new inventory, if you can think about it that way, provides the outlet for sellers and first-time home buyers who can't find what they're looking for in the existing home inventory. Over the 12 years between 2008 and 2020, according to Lawrence Yoon, the economist, the chief economist for the National Association of Realtors, new home construction was significantly below historical average demand-based levels. And only in the last 2 years, so 2020 and 2021, has new home construction returned to the historical levels to meet demand. But we still have 12 years of undersupply to catch up on. So the supply side's a little tight still, but it is improving as new home construction picks up. On the demand side, you'll remember from my last visit here that we discussed four trends impacting demand. The first trend, which we just discussed above, was the low, very low new construction levels at that time. It's still with us, but it's improving. The third and fourth trend were both related to the pandemic, the increases in divorces causing one whole household to split into two, and the huge mass exodus from the large cities to regions such as ours. Put a lot of pressure on areas such as ours. These last two trends, I think we can agree, are probably no longer significant driving demand. The second trend, however, is still going strong and growing larger all the time. The entry of the millennials into the marketplace as first-time homebuyers, and the fact that that group, the millennial group, is 20% larger than the baby boomers, who we have historically talked about as being the group that set the pace and the standards. And you'll remember that they had a profound impact on housing in the 70s and the 80s. And according to the National Association of Realtors, 2 years ago, millennials accounted for 37% of all home purchases. And last year, they were 43%.
Wow.
So they are growing in terms of the number of transactions that they are involved in. And a recent Bank of America survey asked the millennials, and two-thirds of them said they expected to buy a house over the next 2 or 3 years. So I think you can agree that we have an enormous number of buyers still in the market. Demand is still growing, but the extreme seller's market over the last 2 years is shifting ever so slightly back towards a balance. Part of that is the interest rate rises and the people not being able to afford the payments. If this plays out in my world, as instead of having multiple offers of 10 or 20, or in one case we had an agent have 50 offers on one home, we're seeing 4 or 5 offers, which is much more manageable for buyers. It gives buyers a much better chance to get 1 in 4 than 1 in 20.
Yeah, and that goes back to your point about homeowners being afraid to sell without having another home ready, because if they're going to be going up against 20, 30, 50 people, it might be more likely that they wouldn't have that home replacement. So now there could be some light at the end of the tunnel for those homeowners who are looking to maybe upgrade or downgrade or whatever it might be. So there could be some hope for them there. And we'll talk more about, I wanted to mention the millennials as well, because I wasn't even sure what the millennial generation was. And it's basically those born between 1982 and 1996. So that gives you kind of an idea, I think. So, folks, we are at our first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And we'll return with our guest, Carrie Ward, Realtor with Howard Hanna, the Frederick Group. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also available on the WDIY app. And we are speaking with Carrie Ward, Realtor for Howard Hanna, the Frederick Group, this evening, talking about real estate, particularly in the Lehigh Valley. But really, a lot of these trends that Carrie's talking about this evening, you could probably see across the country. Carrie, one of the things we just mentioned or you highlighted is that when we talk about is the real estate market cooling off, it's still homes for sale. There's still demand for homes. You kind of indicated that maybe we're not seeing 20 or 30 offers as frequently as we were, you know, several months ago. Maybe it's, you know, 5 offers. But one of the things that could have impacted that was, you know, the increase in interest rates. Some people may not be able to afford the house they thought they could, because the interest rate has a direct impact on their monthly payment amount. So can you talk a little bit more about that and put some kind of story behind what we think we might be seeing here with the interest rates and
absolutely
the housing market?
Excellent, excellent question. And of course, it's a question that I face a lot lately. We had a very large interest rate hike a few weeks ago, as you are well aware. And the news is actually full recently of predicted another large increase at the end of the month. The first large increase did cause a large number of buyers to step out of the market for exactly what you said, because the payment for the homes they were looking at had crept up past their upper budget's limit. And many, actually, quite frankly, were exhausted from the search. So they're recalibrating, and they're asking themselves questions like, should we start looking in a lower price range? Should we stop and wait for the market to crash? We'll talk more about that later in the show. Or should we break our budget limit and just go for it? We may not have a better time than this. And my answer to all of the above is no. No, absolutely not. Go back to your lender. All the lenders in the Valley and beyond are working with, that I work with and recommend to my clients, are all coming up with new loan products or reimagining old loan products. And they're designed for this changing market specifically. Absolutely, you need to stay within your budget. That's a must, and I'm sure as a financial planner you would agree with that, Lori.
Yes, yes.
So take a look at first-time home buyer programs with closing cost forgiveness. There's a lot of those around these days. Ask about 15% down, no PMI. That's the mortgage insurance. Conventional mortgages with 30-year fixed rates. Some of those rates are really good. Look at mortgages with fixed rates for only 5 or 7 years instead of the 30 that you currently are probably qualified for. These rates these days are often in the 4% range. So if you're willing to take a risk that interest rates won't be three times as high in 5 or 7 years, which people say that inflation will probably be under control in the next 5 to 7 years, and rates will probably be sliding back down again. So if you can lock in a 4% range for 5 to 7 years, and then deal with what happens in 5 to 7 years. Interest rates are not as high as they feel, and people kind of get upset because they did rise 0.75%, and we did see interest rates rise on mortgages above 6%. Even I heard someone was quoted a 7% rate. But it's left many buyers feeling left out, that they missed the low rates of the last 2 years. But in reality, the average rate in February of 2020, before all of this craziness began, was around 3.5%. It went down, some might say, was pushed down artificially by the Fed, to the low twos, and they're currently back up to 5.5. The average buyer, it feels like it's doubled from 2.25 to 5.5. However, if you're willing to finance with some of these new loan products, particularly the ones at 5 to 7 years, you can get a rate in the 4%. So you're only just slightly above the 3.5 that we had 2 years ago. And then you can refinance. You'll have more equity because you will have paid down part of your mortgage. You will be a better qualified borrower because you will have more equity, and you'll have a track record with your lender.
You know, Carrie, you bring up some good points there because you know, I always say it's what you don't know that can get you in trouble, and I think people quite often don't do their research. At the end of every show, we say be proactive, not reactive, because you have a lot more choices on the front end of a proactive decision versus when you're reactive. And to your point, you have realtors who are out there able to provide some of this guidance, because I'm not sure I even thought about this or knew about this, that you could go into a short-term fixed rate for 5 or 7 years. I mean, we used to talk about an ARM or a balloon, you know. So maybe there are some, you know, and sorry, these millennials are probably getting advice from their parents who don't realize that there's been
a lot of
changes in the, you know, banking world and mortgage world. So I think that was important. The other thing you had said that I circled or made a note about was ask about 15% down and no PMI. PMI, folks, is that primary mortgage insurance, if I said that right.
Private
mortgage insurance that you have to buy if you don't have 20% down. That's what we always thought. And what you're saying here is 15% down, you might be able to get out of the PMI. Now,
new mortgage products are being created all the time,
yeah.
And that's one of the new ones that's just come on the market.
So mom and dad might not know that either. I'm the parent of millennials. So we have a couple minute before our break, and let's see if we can do a little, let's look at this question. When we come back from the break, we'll answer it.
Okay.
So we had a question from Marcelo, and he asked, what is your advice for young people and first-time home buyers as they enter the housing market for the first time and start to save for down payments. Well, the first thing is don't listen to your parents. Talk to a professional because the baby boomers don't know the world anymore. And then at face value, purchasing a home feels like an unattainable goal as housing prices continue to climb. I do think a lot of young people think that.
Yes.
Do you feel optimistic for future home buyers? So we'll answer those questions when we come back from our break. I will say I am still optimistic for future home buyers because real estate typically, I mean, generally, we can never make guarantees, you know, on this program or anywhere else, but real estate typically is a good investment. Folks, if you have questions about real estate or other questions, I have Carrie Ward with me here this evening. She's a realtor with Howard Hanna, the Frederick Group, and we're talking about real estate and some tips. If you need some tips, we're happy to take your questions at 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is Sue King. Here at WDIY, we love our members because their contributions make all the great programming you hear possible. Rob from Bethlehem recently renewed his membership and said, "Keep up the great work. WDIY is the right place to listen on the left end of the dial." Join Rob and become a WDIY member today. Visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 4.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. And I am talking with Carrie Ward, realtor with Howard Hanna, the Frederick Group. We are talking about real estate and the state of real estate in the local area, but much of this applies nationally as well. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can also send questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, which we received from Marcelo, and he asked, "What is your advice for young people and first-time homebuyers as they enter the housing market for the first time and start to save for down payments?" And I can answer some of that as well. "And at face value, purchasing a home feels like an unattainable goal as housing prices continue to climb. Do you feel optimistic for future home buyers?" What do you have to say?
Great questions. Mm-hmm. Terms of optimism, yes, I do feel optimistic for future home buyers. It's not going to be easy. It hasn't been easy the last couple of years. But if you think back when you were purchasing your first home, it seemed unattainable goal. So I think first-time home buying feels unattainable for everyone. It's just a matter of figuring out how much money you're going to need for the type of house that you want to buy, what's your budget, and is your credit score in good shape, and can you get pre-qualified for a loan? Then you need to be engaging with an agent to help you look at the homes and advise you on choices and styles and, you know, future. How long are you going to stay in the home? If you're a single person and not planning to get married and you're going to stay there for 5-6 years, you might choose a different home than if you're married, with the baby on the way, and planning to have more kids. Mm-hmm. Because it's better for you financially if you can purchase a home and stay in the home for at least 7 years, 7 to 10 years,
okay.
Not be paying closing costs every 5 years or 3 years or 4 years.
Good tip.
Mm-hmm. In terms of mortgages, there are, as we said, a number of different products that are available. There are a lot of mortgage support for first-time home buyers. These are income-based, but they're not low-income-based. They are reasonable income-based programs that pay your closing costs. I've seen $7,500 payments. I've seen $10,000 payments. And they are set up as a second mortgage on your property. And each year, one-tenth of that that second mortgage, which you're not making any payments on, and there's no interest accumulating on it, gets reduced. And at the end of 10 years, that second mortgage is completely wiped off. And essentially, you are given the $10,000 or the $7,500 to pay your closing costs. So it reduces the burden of down payment to get you into a home. And once you get into that first home, it's much easier to get the next home and move on from there.
And you mentioned credit and building up credit. I think that that's really important as well. And how do you do that? You find out a lot of these young kids coming out of college, they might use debit cards. They don't think about credit. You know, I say get a credit card, pay it off every month, put a little bit on it. My daughter got one at a clothing store and paid it off every month. And she has great credit and then got her own credit card, pays it off. So that builds up credit, which is really important whether you're renting or buying a home or even getting a job. So that's important. Another way I think to start saving is, you know, look at what you're spending now. Start, you know, a budget, save extra money, and set it aside in a designated account for that home. And what I like to tell people is when you've done the saving, when the opportunity presents itself, you're ready for it. So you could take a couple years to start saving and see where you go, where you are. The other thing is, you know, and I don't know if realtors do this, Carrie, but I know I did this in Michigan with my husband. We wanted a second home. We weren't sure what we wanted. We actually met with a realtor and they took us around and they gave us, hey, look at this, don't look there, don't do there. And we started saving. We knew what we wanted. 4 years later, we went to the same realtor and the opportunity presented itself and then we were ready. Mm-hmm. And so it worked out really well. But so finding ways to save that cash. The other thing is I say if you're paying rent right now, let's pretend rent is $1,000 a month and a house that you might like might cost $1,500 a month with the mortgage, the insurance, real estate taxes. I say, can you afford an extra $500 in your budget now? So then you start taking the $500 and setting that aside every month. And if you're able to do it, then perhaps you will be able to afford that $1,500 mortgage. And after you do that for a couple of years, you've saved how much money? You've saved $12,000 after 2 years, and now you have a little bit more for that down payment. So just little tips like that. So, Carrie, we also had a call come in from Jeff in Nazareth, and he said, a seller used to loan to a buyer. Does that still happen? And what are your thoughts on that? And let me just kind of clarify that. So, Jeff, yes, there still can be seller financed type of mortgages or situations where a seller will hold the mortgage for the buyer. I actually see more often parents holding a mortgage, like buying the home for the child and then doing a mortgage with their child and then the children pay the parents. Are you seeing this very often, Carrie?
No. Not at all in the current market.
No.
So it's risky for a seller to be the bank.
Yeah.
Because then they're set up in case something happens with the buyers. They can't continue to make payments. Then the seller has to do the foreclosure process, and it's just not something that a seller wants to be involved in. And typically when a seller sells, they want the net proceeds from the sale in order to buy another house. So they often don't have the financial capabilities to leave most of their equity in the home. It was a tactic and a technique used back when, like, your home took 2 years to sell. Sometimes if you really, really wanted to just sell the house, it was something you might have considered. In this market, there are four or five buyers that have mortgage pre-qualifications or in some case cash. We're seeing a lot of cash. So there's no need for a seller to do that. Unless, of course, as you said, it's a familiar situation, a cousin, a daughter, or a son.
Jeff, I agree with Carrie. I haven't seen it other than family situations. And back in the day, I think we saw it sometimes with businesses. When someone was selling a business, they would have an installment sale or something like that. But I have not seen that with my own clients. So thank you for the question, though. It is possible, just not probable, I think is what Carrie is saying these days.
Correct.
Okay, well, thank you. And thank you for our email question from our listener, so I appreciate that. Carrie, we have about one more minute before our halfway mark, so I just want to remind people that we are talking with Carrie Ward of Howard Hanna, the Frederick Group, Real Estate Services. What do you just say real estate?
Real estate services, yes.
Okay. And we are talking about the state of real estate in the Lehigh Valley, and we're going to have some tips as we go through the show. If you have any questions, as Jeff did and Marcelo did, you can certainly call those in at 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, or you can send questions through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY Allentown, the time is now 6:30 and it's 91 with clear skies. Lehigh Valley weather tonight is going to be low, around 75 degrees. Thursday, we're going to have a chance of thunderstorms and rain, high 96. Thursday night, it's going to be low, around 70. And going into your weekend, Friday, sunny, high 94. Friday night, low around 70. And Saturday, it's going to be high 97 degrees. And Saturday night, low 73. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back. Folks, if you have questions, we have Eric in the studio who is happy to answer the phones at 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with Carrie and I, or you can give your question to Eric and he'll write it down and bring it into us. Again, that's 610-758-8810. I am speaking with Carrie Ward, Realtor with Howard Hanna, the Frederick Group. Carrie, we mentioned earlier, you said something about, what was it, the housing crash.
Crash, yeah.
And you and I just answered a listener's question saying, we're optimistic about the housing market. So what were you alluding to? Because you said we would talk about that in a little bit. And I suspect that it has something to do with all this talk about recession. Are we in one? Are we going to have one? Has it already happened? Is it not going to happen? So do you want to opine on what you meant and about the housing crash? Everyone thinks it's coming, maybe.
Sure. I think people hear the word recession, particularly since we just had the Great Recession in 2008. And especially for the millennial generation, that was the pinnacle of their experience with recessions. They have not really had experience with any other type of recession. And they associate it with a housing crash.
Mm.
And so I get a lot of questions, are we going to have another crash? Shouldn't I just wait and buy when all the prices fall by 10, 20, 30%? I think we need to compare what was going on pre-2008 with pre-2022 in two important areas. The first was home financing. In the years leading up to 2028, the Great Recession, there was unsupportable expectations that prices were near perpetual. They would continue to go up forever. People were quoting, housing prices have always risen. Well, yes, they over history, they've always gone up, but there have been periods of decline. And they were getting into these loans with very poor quality loans, often with very low down payments, meaning they were putting in little equity, mm-hmm. in some case, no equity. The buyers were unqualified. We had what we called no-doc loans. So you just said, yes, I have a job, but you didn't have to prove you had a job.
Oh, wow.
You didn't have to prove you had any money in the bank. You didn't have to prove you could pay the loan back. And we had these low teaser rates of 3%, 5% with very, very low payments. But on the back end, after 5 years, 7 years, in some cases 10 years, they jumped up to 10% or 12%. And suddenly people's mortgage payments doubled.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really understand what they were getting into. And they thought, well, the market's going to keep going. I'll just sell it and refinance. Unfortunately, this created the housing bubble that collapsed in 2008 and left many, many people owing more on the homes that they had purchased than the homes were actually worth. They were unable to afford the new payments as they came into play. and they couldn't sell or refinance because they had no equity. And they caused a lot of pain, a great amount of pain, and the market was flooded with homes.
And a lot of people were taking the equity out of their home and getting lines
of credit.
Well,
that was another thing that people were doing, yes. They were using their homes as ATMs.
Buying their cars, paying for college. Yeah.
And so we had an extreme buyer's market, which was the exact opposite of what we have today. By contrast, in the most recent 3 years, we've seen only very well-qualified buyers putting large amounts of equity down and locking into 30-year fixed rates. I mean, with 10 offers, the top offer was the one with the most equity putting down and the best rate and the best financing. And in some cases, we had a huge number of people paying cash. I mean, just recently, according to the National Association of Realtors, all transactions, still 25% of them are all cash.
Jeez.
And as a country, we have an unprecedented 27.8 trillion in equity in our homes. So we've got plenty of room to absorb any slight decreases in home values, combined with lots of fixed rate mortgages. Recently, all the new buyers had fixed rate mortgages of 30 years, and therefore they had fixed payments. And those payments are not going to reset in 5 years or 10 years. It's going to allow us to weather the upcoming recession, and the vast, vast majority of homeowners are going to be able to remain in their homes. Mm-hmm. The second area to think about is our old friend, supply and demand, which we talked about earlier in the program. If most people are staying in their homes, then inventory is still going to be constrained. And as we discussed earlier, it's still a seller's market. And when the recession comes, what it will likely show up as is smaller or minimal annual increases. In 2020, according to the Greater Lehigh Valley Realtors, our median home price here in the Lehigh Valley increased by 11.6%. In 2021, it was 13.2%, and as of the end of June, it was currently running at 14%.
Those are pretty high.
That's huge increases in prices. To kind of put this in perspective, the local median home price for the Lehigh Valley prior to 2008 was just below $225,000. After 2008, the price bounced up and down between $150,000 and $200,000 for about 9 years. And then in 2017, it began to climb. And the price at the end of 2021 was $280,000. That's the median home price for the area. And at the end of June, it was flirting with $300,000. This year.
Mm-hmm.
So should you wait to buy at a lower price after the crash? I don't think the rationale is there to wait. The time is now to lock in your payment level that you can afford for the longest time that you can, for the best loan that you can get. I'd say call your lender. And if you don't have a lender, call your agent and ask them for a referral.
Okay. Wow. So interesting, because I remember our home, I think we bought in 1988, a row home in Allentown, and 10 years later, after putting money into it, I had to write a check to get out of it. So it probably depends on where you are as well.
Okay. Absolutely, in the market.
All right. We had a couple questions come in, if we can go through these. So we had Nancy from South Whitehall, and she said, why no condos are being built for older people's, like baby boomers, as opposed to rental apartments? She would like to downsize. What are your recommendations? So I think the question is, you know, why aren't we seeing more condos for baby boomers?
That's a good question. This area typically has not had a large number of condos built ever. And the current building for the baby boomers, if you will, are the 55 and over communities.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and I need to research this a little more to be definitive, but I would think that it's the cost of construction that they want to build homes. They need to build homes that are more expensive because the cost of building the home is so expensive that it's difficult to build a home that's only $150,000 or $200,000. Now, condos typically are more in apartment-like structures, and so perhaps there's a growing demand that will allow a construction company, a builder, to think about maybe this is something that we should look into.
You know, places like duplexes might work or be comparable to maybe a condo, but I guess I think what happens is the baby boomers like the idea of condos because they don't want to take care of the lawn
grass. Or the snow.
Yeah, or the snow
or the roof.
Yes. So it's so interesting, but you would have that if you were like in a, I was kind of thinking a smaller home like a duplex, but they would still be responsible for that. The place we have in Michigan, if I can digress for a second, is actually a condo. There's only four of them. It's like two duplexes, and we share a garage. So the four must have been original owners or whatever, got together and said, hey, these are vacation homes. Let's get together, make a condo association. So maybe we could see more like that. So it's like the size of a regular home.
Correct. Potentially conversions. Mm-hmm. That's a possibility.
Yeah.
It's been common in larger cities such as New York and Philadelphia to do conversions of apartments into condos.
Okay.
But we haven't seen that here in the Valley.
Okay. Well, Nancy, thank you for that question. It's good. And maybe we'll spark some real estate developers' interest with that question. We also had Megan from Easton call, and she asked why and how to use a real estate broker as opposed to an agent or realtor. This is a first-time buyer, a broker or an agent. I think, frankly, I love this question, Megan, because I think this is very confusing for a number of people. It used to be you had a broker, then you had a real estate agent, then they're a broker agent, and for the seller and the buyer and the seller. Can you simplify it for us?
It's a matter of definition. Technically, they are the same, providing the same service. A broker, the title is the person who owns the brokerage, typically. It's someone who has a broker's license, so there's an agent's license.
So an agent works for a broker.
Correct.
Okay, and the broker is usually the owner of the agency. Okay.
Now, an agent can, with experience and training, become a broker as well. If they wish to remain in the same company, they can become an associate broker under that broker. They're still doing the listing and selling of properties. A broker, my broker, for example, is a working broker. Some brokers are just managers, and they don't buy or help list or sell properties. Doug Frederick, my broker, he is an active broker and does list and sell properties. So it's just levels of agent.
Okay.
In terms of experience and authority.
Okay.
An agent has to work for a broker. They cannot be an independent person. They have to put their license with a brokerage. And then the other question I think was,
why and how to use a real estate broker as opposed to
a realtor. So a realtor is the title that we get for becoming a member of the National Association of Realtors. If you pay your dues to that organization, you are entitled to use the word realtor.
So you could be an agent and not be a realtor.
It would be difficult.
Oh, okay.
It is possible. It legally is possible, but there are a lot of advantages to being a part of the association, and then the Pennsylvania Association of Realtors as well, and then your local MLS, which in our case is the Greater Lehigh Valley Realtors.
Okay. And it's interesting that you mentioned that Doug Frederick was a broker and is an acting broker. Active agent, because that actually, when you're looking at an agent who might be starting out, they could be hungry and want to show you all these different properties, but it's nice if their broker has experience that can mentor them.
Correct.
So just because they don't have the years of experience doesn't mean they don't have access to really good information.
Knowledge
or tips.
And experience. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Great question.
Yeah, thank you, Megan, and thank you, Nancy, for calling in, and Jeff, of course, earlier. And the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, if you have more questions as well. We still have time. So Carrie, before the questions came in, we were talking a little bit about, you know, the value of homes and the appreciation. And I know when I'm doing financial plans for people, I typically only appreciate their homes 1% a year. but we often update home values for clients just when we're trying to look at net worth. And it's always important to understand the equity behind what they have, and if they're able to manage that as part of the financial plan. As you said, make sure you know your budget, stick to your budget. Often I'll tell people even buy under what you can afford, because, you know, chances are you're going to want to buy new furniture and do landscaping and all other kinds of things you hadn't thought about before you moved into that beautiful home. But so kind of going back to what you were talking about earlier, that, you know, at one time we were seeing maybe 20 offers or 30 offers, and now we're still seeing it's a seller's market. There's still demand there. You might see 5 offers now, but it is still kind of a seller's market. It's not as extreme as it had been. Inventory, you said, was expected to remain tight. Mm-hmm. Buyer demand is still strong and expected to remain that way for at least the next 3 years because of these millennials who keep kind of entering the market. I know my son, who's at the edge of that millennial, he's even saying, I want to buy a home. But if I kind of go back, I just want to close the loop on our discussion about the, you know, housing crash and people waiting for it. We're not saying that. You're saying it's not coming.
Yep.
So don't think that you have to wait for that. Work with a lender who can help you afford the house you want.
Correct.
Even in Absolutely. These extreme, you know, kind of buyer market.
Yeah, perfect. I mean, as the saying goes, live in the payment and not in the price.
Okay.
So obviously the price drives your payment. But if you find the right combination of interest and payment terms, and as I say, some of these closing cost forgiveness programs that are available now, it means you can buy a little bit more house because your down payment can go a little further. You have less money allocated towards the closing costs.
Really good information. And I'm sure there's people out there who are thinking about this who had not known about that. So it's important to work with people who know that information. Folks, we are at our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also available on WDIY.org, where podcasts of prior programs are available under Public Affairs. And the programs are also available on pretty much any streaming app you might have. Apple Music, I think, Spotify, WDIY.org, yourfinancialchoices.com, NPR.org. So you can find us online. Particularly if you've listened this evening and think this might be an important program for someone you know who's interested in buying real estate or checking out the market, you can point them to any of those resources. So, Carrie, I know that we wanted to talk about the real estate environment, which we have been doing. And I also wanted to give some education tips. One thing I love about WDIY is our opportunity to share education with our listeners. That's why they tune in. So I thought maybe we could go through some tips that you might be able to give them. So let me start with, what's the most important aspect of buying to focus on in order to successfully buy a home in this market?
Good question. No question that your choice of the lender is absolutely critical. Your great credit score and the amount of money you've saved up to put down are all important. But in a multiple offer situation, one of the key things that we, the seller's agent and the sellers are focused on are the lenders that are listed in the offers.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And our questions are they local? Do they know this market, particularly if we're going to have an appraisal? Do they know that the house, no, it should actually appraise for that price. I don't know what's wrong. And are they reliable? Meaning, will we actually close? Will they get it done in time? And will they be still around? I've actually heard of some lenders starting to fail recently because of the increase in the interest rates. And we look at the pre-qualification letter, and does it actually say they are pre-qualified? Or does it just say you're sort of maybe could buy a house? And it's you have to actually read what the words say. And does it give any details on the interest rates, which obviously is extremely important? If the interest rate is listed at 2.5%, well, there's no way that they're actually going to get a loan for 2.5%. And what is the type of loan? Remember, the key for the seller is they want to pick the offer that has the best chance of closing on time and according to how the offer is written. It is well known that 90% of buyers start their home search online. Actually, it's probably 98% these days. And as a result, buyers are often inundated with online lenders and newly created programs offering extremely enticing opportunities to save thousands or get pre-approved in your pajamas. It's convenient and it's easy to get lured into these applications to apply. And it often sets off an avalanche of calls and emails and text messages, you know, when you sign up for something and all of a sudden, where did all that come from? It's also an opportunity to get your personal data stolen because if you're applying for a mortgage, you're having to give out your social security number. My advice to my clients is to stick with the local banks and lenders with excellent reputations. And there are many of them in the Valley. In addition, most of the large brokerage companies, such as the one that I happen to work for, now have mortgage companies associated with them. They are also an excellent option as they are well-funded and strongly aligned to adjust to all of these changing markets and help buyers achieve their dreams. The 15% down is actually a program that comes from Howard Hanna Mortgage. And all these lenders have the ability to apply in your pajamas, if that's your thing.
You know, it's funny, you said that the agents are and the sellers are often looking for the buyer who's going to be able to close, and you're looking at those lenders. I think that's really interesting because I am not sure as a buyer or even the seller that they realize that's really important to the realtor or the agent. And the realtor and agent probably knows that. You may not even communicate that to the seller. I'm not sure I remember that. So I think that's important, and that comes with probably an experienced agent as well. So any advice to sellers on choosing an agent?
Sure. An agent with experience, particularly in this market. Not to say that a newer agent can't give you great service, particularly, as you said, if they have the support of their office, either a manager or a broker, a seasoned broker to help them along, or they're part of a team. That can be a good thing as well. But it has never been more challenging to be a seller's agent than today when you have these multiple offers because you can only choose one. And you have to get it right, because if that offer doesn't close, those nine others that you rejected are probably gone someplace else.
Can I ask you then, so is it, if let's say the seller gets nine offers and they're working with the agent, who is really kind of vetting those nine offers? Is it the agent
It's a collaborative team.
Because so what if the seller says, oh, that person looked so sweet when they came in. They were so nice to me. They liked my paint color.
Yes. So. And that's important.
You have to steer them away.
it's important, but we have to look at the numbers, and we have to look at the buyers in terms of what is their ability to perform. Do they have the money to make this work? If they are obviously very tight in terms of their cash and their offering. This is clearly the top of their budget range. If there's anything that goes wrong as we're going through this, if there's any issues with the appraisal and there's a gap between the, that particular buyer we know is going to have trouble getting to the closing table. Someone who comes in and offers cash and no appraisals and no inspections and, well, they're pretty much going to come to the table and they're pretty much going to close unless they change their mind, in which case they'll lose their deposit. But they're a very low risk. Mm-hmm. And so between the cash offers and the high risk buyers, there's often a wide, wide range. And that's the tricky part, is grading the different offers in terms of how much money are they offering, how much are they putting down, what kind of loan are they using, what kind of bank are they using, what kind of interest rates are they being offered, and what are their contingencies are they asking for? Do they want inspections? Do they want appraisal? What happens if the appraisal doesn't come in as according to the, what are they going to do?
So you might have, as an agent for that seller, three viable offers.
Correct.
And then it's about not maybe just running the numbers, but that's where you could then go to the seller, what do you think? And the seller might say, hey, they have two kids just like we had two kids.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Their parents live next door, you know. Whatever.
Exactly. And then if it comes down to that qualitative information, then yes, obviously, if you have three perfectly capable, qualified buyers, then sometimes it comes down to that. And some agents have their buyers write a letter to the sellers. Mm-hmm. Some agents refuse to do that, and some sellers refuse to read them.
Mm-hmm.
I allow my sellers to choose. Do you want to see any offers, any paperwork that comes with the offer in terms of a letter or that? And I let the seller choose. I don't dictate to them what they should or should not consider.
That's a good way to do it.
And some want to look at all the offers blind, you know, no names, no agencies, nothing. They just want the numbers. And then after they've narrowed it down to one or two, then they want to know, okay, did they send in a letter?
Okay. And how about these offers with no appraisals and no inspections? I mean, I heard it over and over and over again, and clients just couldn't compete with those people coming in with cash. Are these actually individuals buying for the most part, or are they, you know, real estate conglomerates who are?
The vast majority that I've seen have been individuals.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about, we had about 350,000 individuals come to this area from New York City in 2020 and 2021. They sold their, you know, $2 million shack in the city and come here with a million in cash and say, I'll buy that $650,000 house cash.
Right.
And I'll pay $750 for it because it's cheap.
Yeah, right.
It's all relative.
That's what we were running into when we came in 88. People from Jersey were coming in and buying up all these row homes. Our neighbor had bought their row home, I think, 2 years before for $35,000, and we bought ours 2 years later or a year later for $85,000. And everyone said, it's the people from New Jersey. No offense to people from New Jersey. You're welcome. I'm just saying, that's what ran those prices up. We have a few minutes left, so I just want to ask one last question. You hear about people getting those little mailers in the mail, and sometimes even for a development, there's been a particular real estate agent. And so sometimes people feel like they have to go with that local person. Is there any meaning behind any of that?
No. I mean, I've had questions from individuals in particularly in certain developments that said, well, I can't use you because I have to use the designated agent. And I'm like, there's no designated agent. Real estate is a free market business. Yes, there's an agent who is working in your neighborhood, probably does a lot of sales in your neighborhood, probably is very, very familiar with your neighborhood, and would obviously be a good choice. But if you have a relationship with someone who's a realtor and they're not the neighborhood agent and you would prefer to work with that person, then you're more than welcome to do that. It's a free market economy.
Okay, very good. And I know that you get you send out newsletters every month, and I've enjoyed reading some of those tips. I don't know who you send those out to, but we have about 1 minute left, so I just want to mention some of these tip letters, because one is stage your home to sell. And before the show, I had told Carrie, I think it's really important for people who want to sell their home to actually have their realtor come in and look around the house so that you can get ideas of what you need to fix and what you don't have to fix, because that's important too. Sometimes people think, oh, I have to renovate my bathroom first. The realtor will often tell you, your
exactly.
agent will say, no, you don't, just paint it or clean it. and then she had summer travel hacks. She's had some on credit cards, just a number of newsletter tips, which are great. And I don't know if those are available on your website, but if people want to reach you, Carrie, how do they reach you? You have a website?
I have a website, carrieward.howardhanna.com.
Howardhanna.com. And Carrie Ward is CarrieWard.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
My phone number is 484-347-2359. And my email address is CarrieWard, CarrieWard.realestate@gmail.com.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Yeah. And I'm sure it could change in another 6 months that we'll have to bring Carrie back again.
Awesome.
Folks, if you have questions that we didn't cover tonight, you can send those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and I'd be happy to pass those on to Carrie as well. So again, that's yourfinancialchoices.com. Next week, my topic is going to be, I will tell you in just a minute, what an annual review of your financial situation looks like. Yes, what an annual review of your financial situation looks like. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to thank Eric for being here. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, Marcella, for being here. Thank you, listeners, for your questions. I really appreciate it. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.